This is ContraZoom,
where we go back and forth about film.
I'm Dakota Arsenault.
And I'm Rachel Ho. We are back with another episode of the A24 Retrospective series. The last one that we did was Slow West, which was the Michael Fassbender and Cody Smith McPhee movie, and that is on episode 250, if you want to go back and check that out. This week, we're going to be looking at the next film in the A24 lineup, which is Barely Lethal. To join us today, we are welcoming back Jericho Tadeo, who was on Slow West. Am I wrong in saying that? I think you were on Slow West.
I was.
You were on Slow West. Okay, thank you. So hi, Jericho. Welcome back.
Hello, hello. I am happy to be back.
How have things been since whenever we recorded that episode? I believe it was like a month ago that we did that.
Yeah, that was like a full film festival ago.
Yeah, and I think at the time, I think you might have said this off air. I say air like we're on radio, but I think you said this off air of saying how you wanted to do one that was like a bad movie so that we could just have fun basically shitting all over a film. And
yeah,
this was perfect because literally the next one was like, Dakota said to me, he's like, do you think he'd do like another one like so soon? I was like, why not? Because this is a really bad movie. But before we get going, Dakota, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. And I'll just point out that Slow West, that episode came out in August 29th. So it's more than a month ago, Rachel.
Time has no meaning to me.
It really doesn't.
Time has legitimately.
It does feel like last year.
Doesn't it though? Or like yesterday at the same time? I don't really know.
I feel like I lived like three lifetimes between then and now.
Time is a flat circle.
Jesus, that really was in August, and we're on December 1st right now recording. That's crazy.
Yeah. I never knew my parents. The only thing I ever knew was Prescott, special school for orphans.
Back of the line, Grandma.
Move!
That had some unique ideas about education.
Meet Victoria Knox. American arms dealer. Catch her, Agent 83, and bring her in.
It wasn't until I was put in the field that I saw what I was missing.
You missing someone?
Come in if you hear me.
This was my way out.
Anyways, we are going to be talking about Barely Lethal, which I've already kind of hinted. It's not a good movie. It's just kind of a dumb movie, but it's part of A24's lineup. And as per our due diligence in this series, of course, we have to go through it. And it can line up in the echelon of other bad movies that we've had to watch because A24 is not always, they're not always giving us winners, which is fine. And we can get into that later. For those of you who don't know, I almost forgot the name of this movie. Barely Lethal is directed by Kyle Newman, is written by John Darko, and it stars Hailee Steinfeld and Dove Cameron. Now, I'm not overly familiar with Dove Cameron, but Hailee Steinfeld has become a pretty big deal, I would say, or a moderately big deal in the last few years, with big thanks to Marvel. The two of them, or I should start with Hailee Steinfeld, stars as a undercover agent who has grown up very much like Natasha Romanoff, Black Widow styles in Marvel. And she plays Agent 83 and is enrolled in a like agent school with Samuel Jackson, funny enough, talking about Marvel, who is the head of it. Hailee Steinfeld, one day, her character Megan, basically decides to go AWOL and pretend that she died during a mission and poses as a Canadian exchange student into a high school and attempts to ingratiate herself into a typical high school experience. And there she meets Dove Cameron's character, Liz Larson, and decides that, and that is her host family for her stay in this high school. I apologize if I'm not making much sense, by the way. I'm not feeling very well, I'm just going to say. But the film is meant to be a comedy. It is meant to be a bit of an action movie as well, but it's meant to be a send-up of the different genres, high school genre, spy genre, so on and so forth. A24 acquired this along with DirecTV in a similar deal that they made with Slow West, which I find kind of interesting, and we will get into that later. They acquired this movie back in February 2015, which was also the same year that they released, you know, classics like Ex Machina and other ones that have defined A24. And Room as well. I was actually surprised to see Room came out, I think, two or three films after this one. So it's not a great movie, but we're going to get through it. And I will say, before we get into completely shitting on this movie, I wanted to ask Jericho and Dakota, can you guys please say something, like one thing nice about this movie that you guys enjoyed?
Oh, wow. Jericho, let's start with you.
One thing. Sophie Turner looked snatched.
Okay, done. Check. Dakota?
I would say that Dove Cameron, her role, along with, I'm blanking on what her boyfriend's name, Gooch, whatever his real name, Bernard.
Gabriel Basso.
Yeah, every scene that the two of them were in together, I found was legitimately funny. They had great chemistry, and I enjoyed watching the two of them together.
That's good. My positive would just be I like seeing Jessica Alba on screen. When I was growing up, she kind of came up in time where she was like, she was a big deal, like back in the day with Dark Angel, and she had a dance movie called Honey. Mm-hmm. And I always really liked her. I probably just because I thought she was really pretty, but I really liked her. And I don't see her in very many movies anymore. I mean, 2015, she was acting regularly still, but it's nice to see her in a film. Not saying she did a great job or a bad job, but I just enjoyed seeing her in this movie. That's all. So I was saying to Dakota before we came on here that I think that this movie is a bit of a difficult one to talk about, in that it's not horrendously offensive. There's nothing about it that I can point to and say like, oh, it's this or that. I mean, you could maybe make an argument that it's slight misogynistic and a little bit sexist, but I kind of think that maybe that's partly what they were going for as well. Overall, it just kind of feels like a bit of a dumb movie. So what I thought would be interesting as a bit of an exercise for us today was to go through and kind of break down why exactly this movie doesn't work, because we've seen many movies that have attempted to send up genres, and some have done it really, really well. So you have movies like Galaxy Quest or even Scream, you know, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Young Frankenstein. Those are like classic films that have tried to make fun of or poke at the genre that they're existing in while also being a very good entry into the genre itself. And I kind of think that that's what this movie was going for. But obviously it just didn't work. So I want to break down why it didn't work, and we'll analyze exactly why this movie is not good, but it's also not horrific either. So I think we'll start with the performances. Dakota, you mentioned that you liked when Dove Cameron and Gabriel Basso were on screen together. Were there any performances in this that you think contributed to this film just not landing in the way that it could have landed?
Yeah, there's a couple, and it's mostly supporting performances, I think, because Hailee Steinfeld, I think she kind of does the best with what she's given. You know, it's not great, it's not there. Samuel L. Jackson kind of does a Sam Jackson thing. We know what to expect. Unfortunately, the man will say yes to basically appearing in any movie. Sophie Turner, I don't think is that strong of an actor on the best of days. I liked what she did in Game of Thrones, but I think that's more of the source material was so great that it was hard to screw up, and everything I've seen her since then hasn't been great. So there's a couple people in particular that I think really stand out as being very much miscast in this movie, especially tonally. And you've got Rob Hubel, who plays Mr. Marcus, which is the father of Roger. So the nerdy guy, the dad of that character. That every scene he was in was just so tonally off-putting, because he starts off, you know, with this joke about he's the overprotective dad and doesn't want his nerdy son getting in with the wrong crowd. And it's like, okay, we understand this trope. But then it goes from like him rhyming off about like crack a smack and all this sort of stuff. And then at the end, when the son leaves the car, he goes, oh yeah, I had some really bad experiences with hash and all this. And it's trying to flip it on the head of like he's trying to pass on his own life wisdom, except for every time we see him, these jokes get increasingly more inappropriate. And it's just like, it doesn't fit in with the rest of the movie. And then the other part that really stood out for being horrifically bad is Dan Folger, who is playing the teacher, Mr. Drum. And he's basically in love with there's this one student in the class, the hot popular kid who's a musician who had a semi-popular song, and so everyone is in love with him, especially the teacher, who's always like, oh, let's jam, I play guitar as well, let's hang out. And it's just so creepy and off-putting. And there's even a moment where there's a school dance and he's, I guess, chaperoning, and he walks in between a couple that are dancing too close and basically makes some semblance of a joke of save room for Jesus, but then looks at the girl and sticks his hand down her dress and pulls the top up so she isn't showing as much cleavage. And it's just like, whoa, that's supposed to be like a 16, 17 year old. What the hell are you doing? So it's that. And I think it sort of has to do with the fact of, I was reading the trivia of this movie, and it was rated PG on IMDb, except for when it came out, it was apparently rated PG-13, except for when they submitted it to the ratings board, it was originally given an R rating, and they said, come on, really? And then they're like, you know what, I guess it's not that bad. There's no nudity, there's almost no swearing, the violence is very minimal, all this sort of stuff, so it's not actually an R rating. So the movie has three different ratings, despite the fact that it doesn't seem to fit into any of them, which means there's nothing worse than a movie that doesn't know what it's trying to be.
Interesting. I think the Ron Hubel character, Mr. Marcus, I think that for me was the oddest one. Like the Fogel's character, Fogler.
Jesus.
Say Gemma Arterton.
Like, I just had a stroke there. Like, my God. But his character was so creepy. But Ron Hubel's character, the thing I didn't understand, one, I agree, I think tonally, it felt like he was in a completely different movie. But then one of the very last scenes when when Steinfeld character goes off with her boyfriend, like his son, he all of a sudden acts like he's like a super overprotective dad. Like he's like, oh, I know you won't like this. Like you don't want me, you know, tape. And it kind of makes him sound like as if he's this real stick in the mud, which, for me, I wasn't paying attention very well, but I was like, that to me was completely backwards of the character that I thought they were leading him up to be. But I agree. I think his comedy style, I usually like him in stuff, especially that show The League. I really liked him in The League. But a lot of things that he's done, like he's got a good kind of sense of humor to him that I enjoy. And really didn't feel like it placed very well in this film. Jericho, how about you? Were there any casting, not necessarily performances, but like as Dakota kind of was talking about, people who maybe were miscast or just looked like they were a part of something different that wasn't really in keeping with this film?
Well, hearing Dakota talk about all of the men, one of my notes was all the men suck.
Yeah.
And I stand by that. And when you were talking about the teacher, I watched this movie last week, and you were describing his moments. I was triggered because I blocked it because it was so cringe and it was so horrible. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that did happen. He did reach into that girl's dress, and he was in love with that one singer student. So I think all of the men characters were the worst. And then it's funny how you brought up earlier the parallel to Black Widow, because I think that movie, for all its flaws, it sort of did a good job of alluding to this idea of women spies being trafficked, or like this metaphor for human trafficking. And watching Barely Lethal with that in mind, and you can see like these girls were, I don't know how they came into Samuel L. Jackson's character's possession, but it just does not seem like the most moral institution. So
it sort of feels maybe like a Batman situation where they're all orphans, because we hear several times that Hailee Steinfeld is an orphan. She's the only character we get any real backstory on, despite the fact that there's several other girls from the academy who we learn about. And so I wonder if she had very rich parents where she could be raised by her housekeeper or whatever, she'd turn into the female version of Batman. Instead, she gets scooped up by Samuel L. Jackson, his academy, and all that sort of stuff, which would have been far more interesting of an idea to explore as you're talking about there. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, all these girls are specifically orphaned because they have no familial attachments.
But the thing I would say is this movie does not give us anything. Like, it really doesn't tell us anything. Like, yes, she says at some point, oh, both my parents are dead. But you could take a jump to, like, what if what Jericho is saying about, you know, Black Widow being a very not so mild analogy for human trafficking. What if these girls were just kind of taken? They were just stolen, you know? But I don't think that this movie is meant to lead to those questions in many ways. Like, I think that this movie, it was never designed to be something where you're like, oh, is this human trafficking? Because Black Widow is very much that. Like, Black Widow definitely touches on those themes. But this film, I think, it leaves a lot of questions, because you could say maybe they are orphans. You could say maybe they were taken. They were kidnapped at a young age or whatever. And we have no idea. But in a sense, it kind of doesn't make a difference into this whole film. But that leads me to the other bit that I want to talk about, which was tonally, this film is meant to be a send-up. It is meant to be something that is making fun of either high school films or high school movies, that type of genre, if that is a genre, but also the genre that Black Widow kind of occupies. Less superhero action-y, but more, I suppose, that espionage type.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree that this movie doesn't exactly do the best job of that. But is there something you guys can point to as to why this movie is an unsuccessful satirical send-up of those genres? Jericho, why don't we start with you?
I think it raises these questions of, like, high school tropes and character stereotypes, but it doesn't offer any sort of solution or new alternative to what we know, because it brings up, like, classic teen movies that we know, like Mean Girls. Mm-hmm. And it pokes fun at the characters that, you know, Mean Girls utilizes, and you can see in Barely Lethal that those stereotypes don't exist in this world. But at the same time, there's nothing for us to anchor ourselves in understanding how this world and how this high school operates, if that makes sense. I don't want to say, like, stereotypes are necessary in storytelling, but because there's no depth in terms of the characters, I was at a loss as to what direction tonally the film wanted to go in terms of being a high school movie when we're in high school.
So you didn't get "it's not another teen movie" kind of vibes from it? Like, it didn't?
No, because at least not another teen movie was, it's very explicit in, this is what we're making fun of, and then this is why it's stupid, or this is why it's funny. Here, it's like, it's trying to be smart about the pitfalls of high school movie tropes, but it doesn't, it's just saying, this is stupid. And that's it. And then we have no other like doorway to enter through. And I couldn't, like, really grasp what was happening.
I'll say it took me a little while to even understand that this movie was a send up of the genres. Like, it took me probably towards the last 20 so minutes or so. I was like, oh, maybe this is meant to be satirical, because it doesn't read that way to me at all. And then when I looked it up, it is like people are being like, oh no, it's meant to be a satire. But Dakota, what about you? What are your thoughts on the tone of it in terms of it attempting to be a satirical type of film?
Yeah, it's tough, because, like, this movie is filled with meta references in terms of, hey, this is very clearly what we're poking fun of, what we're referencing. And they do a fairly decent job of, you know, laying it all out there early on when, what's her name? The Hailee Steinfeld character, Megan, when she gets into the high school, she's been watching all these teen movies, so she's aware of all the different tropes. And a girl asks her to sit down with her, 'cause she's like, oh, you're the new girl, come and sit with us at lunch. And she's like, oh, no, you're not going to get me. I know what you're going to do. You're going to bully me. You're going to tease me and make a big scene out of me. I'm not doing that. I'm going to go eat by myself. Thank you very much. So it starts out being very self-aware of, we know the tropes. She knows the tropes. She's going to avoid them. And then it's just about halfway through, they're just like, yeah, you know what? Let's just give in to all the tropes anyways, and we're just going to go with it. like so much so, you know, this idea of her originally falling in love with the hot boy band guy and that's who she wants, and ignores the fact that the nerdy guy has actually been the one that's secretly in love with her, and all that sort of stuff that we've seen a million times in these teen movies. And they just sort of completely ignore the fact that that's a trope and that they've just inserted it in and done it in an unironic way. And so it's just what they want to do and what they actually do is very different. I will say, I think the actual spy espionage action stuff is probably the best parts of the movie and probably has the best jokes as well. Early on, there's a great joke where they're also being very referential when Jessica Alba gets caught and she says to Samuel L. Jackson, still playing dress up with 007-year-olds, which I was like, wow, this is far too on the nose for a movie that's called Barely Lethal, which in itself is kind of a creepy title.
I hate the title Barely Lethal because I want to say Barely Legal. Like, I think that's what we're all thinking, and it makes me think it's like a weird...
Well, that's the whole point.
But is that...
When I told my partner the title of this movie, he thought I was watching a porno, like an action porno.
I feel like it'd be more interesting than whatever this movie was.
I know, so I'm just like trying to refrain from typing it out in any message ever.
Okay, so let's split it up then. So we talked a bit about the high school stuff, and I think we can all agree, like, there's just, it's, I think it just doesn't help too that that genre of film, the high school genre of film, has had so many great examples done of it that are legit high school movies, that are the films that set up the tropes that would be eventually become tropes, mm-hmm. and then high school the movies that make fun of those tropes. Like,
yeah,
I mean, like, we... The entire 80s, right? Like, those are some great high school movies in there, but all the tropes that we kind of get today are, they started from John Hughes movies, and that's perfectly fine. And there is a way, I think, to still do it. I think Mean Girls, Jericho, you brought that up. That's probably the best example of a more, I say modern day, but I think that that movie is quite old at this point. When did that movie even come out? Yeah, it's like a pretty old movie. 15 years old now. But I recently tried to dabble into Euphoria, and that movie, that's not a movie, but that show is just ridiculously, like, we've come so far the other way of, you know, being these lighthearted mean girls, like, oh, you don't want to sit with me to, like, you know, I'm blackmailing your, anyways, we're not going to get into Euphoria, that's not the point of this show, but... It's just like we've come very, very far away, I think, from that typical, prototypical high school type of movie. But Dakota, you mentioned the espionage thing, and I agree with you. I would have liked to see more of that stuff versus, and I feel like even when it gets to like, everybody knows, like the Liz Larson, Dove Cameron's character, she now knows who Megan is. She now knows who 83 is. I thought we were going to get some like really cool, I don't know, showdown type scene or something that really showed off all of the espionage things that they were learning about in their school. But we don't really get that. We get people throwing shoes at one another, and I'm like, this is so lame, like, why, what was the point of setting up the espionage to that? But and I did enjoy it, though. I think this movie could have been maybe a little bit more interesting, a bit more entertaining, if it had just focused on the espionage stuff. But Jericho, I don't think you've talked much about the espionage aspect of this movie. Do you have any thoughts about it in terms of being maybe not just a send up of it, but like as attempting to be potentially like a legit entry into that genre?
It came to the climax between Megan and her handler, Samuel's character. The climax came too soon that I was like, oh, is the movie done? It was leading up to this idea that, you know, she's going to get caught because every runaway spy gets caught. And it's going to be this final showdown where her new loved ones are going to be in the crossfires, which you kind of see. And then it just becomes, yeah, you can stay in school for the rest of the year, then that's it. And then it switches to, it goes back to the high school narrative where she wants to go to prom or whatever dance that is. And then it's Agent 84, I think, is Sophie Turner's character. Mm-hmm. She becomes like the actual final boss. And there was like a lot of loose threads in terms of like foundation and resolution.
The thing I found interesting was at the end, too, they did seem to allude to, like, oh, we could have a sequel.
A sequel.
Oh, yes, 100%.
I was like, you're ambitious.
I was like, did they really make this movie and then go, you know what, guys? We're going to include this scene that is going to allude to the fact that this is going to be...
We know we can make another one.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be a franchise. This is going to be amazing. It's going to be great. But obviously, nobody's really looking for that. Like, this movie, I should point out, it really didn't do well in the slightest. Like, the critical rating for it was really, really poor. It also got sent to... It was a limited release, so I don't really want to hack on the box office too much, but it did get released pretty much straight to video on demand, which is effectively the straight to home video equivalent of today, mm-hmm. which does bring me on to something I want to talk about, which is, why did A24 acquire this movie? Like, why do you guys think, in the midst of A24's, this is essentially, we're in the, not presently, but like when this movie came out, this is basically the birth of A24 in terms of where it's going to go. So in 2014, you've got movies like Lock and Under the Skin, Enemy, The Rover. I mean, but then you also have films like Revenge of the Green Dragon and Tusk, which I absolutely hate that movie. But Tusk, I can see why that is an A24 movie, because it has Kevin Smith's backing to it. So I can completely understand why. Then you go on and you get Cut Bank, which I can see where A24 is coming from, and I don't think that movie quite worked very well. But you have Ex Machina, and then later on, you're going to get that same year, you get Room, and then The Witch comes out early on in 2016. So to me, this movie is very curious about the decision-making behind, why did they decide to purchase this film and distribute it, when, to me, at least, it doesn't read as part of A24's thing, and it doesn't really fit into the momentum that they were having at that moment. And so again, I'll just remind people that they acquired this movie at the beginning of 2015. So they already have all the success from 2014 behind them. And you know, that also includes A Most Violent Year, which was one of my favorite A24s that I've been a part of for these episodes. So Dakota, you've got a very good grasp about A24 and this and that. Like, why do you think this movie comes in? Where's the decision making behind this as to why this is included as one of the A24 films in this specific time period?
So we've kind of talked about a bit before of what their goals were originally. And it was a lot of, they had their eye on these sort of mid-tier established filmmakers who their films weren't going to light the box office on fire, but were routinely given a lot of critical praise. And so they would try to get bidding wars for early Sofia Coppola movies and things like that, where they sort of occupy that realm, and they struggled to get them because they just didn't have a name for themselves. So then they just started, you know, we just need movies to release so that way we can get in the door and have these meetings with people. And early on, they got really lucky with a couple, you know, big breakout hits of, like, Spring Breakers was a sort of a bit of a cultural phenomenon. Enemy was a huge critical success, so it was Under the Skin, stuff like that. But then, because they were still in this phase of, we just need to release stuff, they were just buying a lot of movies. And luckily, more often than not, they were at least big enough hits with the crowd that they were going for. And then you look at something like Barely Lethal, and I know everyone likes to joke about it, like, you know, what's an A24 movie? Oh, it's elevated horror. Well, yeah, sure, they do some of that, but if you really look, they do a lot of different things, and Barely Lethal doesn't really fit into any of them. Laggies might be maybe one of the closest as far as, like, kind of a teen coming-of-age story, but not really. And then nothing else afterwards really fits into this. I think Barely Lethal, and looking at what we have coming up in the next, you know, 6 months to a year, the next 15 or so movies, I think Barely Lethal was the last of the movies where they were like, we just need to buy something to release it. We have money, we need to spend it, let's find something. And that's what they ended up with. It's got a couple decent names in it, as far as Samuel L. Jackson and Jessica Alba, that can anchor it and hopefully get some revenue in and all that sort of stuff. And from what I understand, all these DirecTV deals were a financial win for A24. It basically covered the cost of what they were trying to do with this. And there was a whole bunch of them that were day and date releases in that era. And I think it was just one of the, it's just the last of its era of, we just need something to release and we have some money, so let's get it. And I think they really learned their lesson maybe a couple movies earlier on, stuff like Cut Bank, and maybe Revenge of the Green Dragons, which really were not successes critically or commercially. And I think this was just the last one that they had to put out. Now, that's not to say that they haven't put out bad movies since, because they absolutely have. But at least with all of them, you can understand what they're going for in terms of an established director, a theme, a genre, stars, things like that. You understand where they're coming from basically all of the movies going forward, except for Barely Lethal. And I think that's just the last oddity before they finally fully figure their shit out.
I would also say, like, Jericho, we will get to you, but I also want to just say, I think, as bad as Revenge of the Dragons and Cut Bank were, I do get why they're A24 acquisitions. Like, I can see where they looked at that mm-hmm. movie and thought, maybe we can, like, it fits in with the general persona that the, or the personality rather, that the, at this point, distribution company has. Like, it, yes. I think it does fit in with that. It just is, like, it just, they just didn't work for whatever reason. But Jericho, what about you in terms of where Barely Lethal falls in the A24 lineup? Does it surprise you to think, like, if you watched this and didn't see that A24 logo, like, is it surprising to think, oh, this was an A24 movie?
Well, actually, I swear I did not see the A24 logo at the start. And I,
you know, good point. I'm actually thinking now too. Did I? I don't think I saw it in my version either.
Maybe yeah, and I was like, from the opening shot, I was like, no, this is not it. They were like, we don't want our name on it. This is just for the book. but Dakotas, what you're saying makes sense from like a fiscal standpoint. If I were to be generous and maybe give Barely Lethal the benefit of the doubt, I would say that 2014, 2015 was like, maybe A24 was thinking, because this was like the heyday of Marvel. Mm-hmm. I'm specifically thinking of The Winter Soldier, Captain America 2. And people wanted a Black Widow movie, and Marvel wasn't giving that to people. So maybe they wanted a woman spy film, or... you brought up Euphoria earlier, and the 2010s for me are like an interesting period of high school movies, because it's like an in-between generation kind of thing. And so we're not really in the 2000s where there's a distinct tone and energy to the high school narrative, and the 2020s where, you know, it's also very distinct and it has its own formula and its own system. And the 2010s, especially the mid 2010s, you're sort of like floating in between, like, what does it mean to be a teenager in this, you know, at the dawn of this digital age where social media wasn't what it is today, but it was on the rise. And so it's like this in between period, and maybe they thought this could be something that speaks to where this genre or this send up of genres is going. But that's too generous.
That's really interesting though. I've never really looked back at the 2010s and thought of it in those terms. Like, it, you're absolutely correct though. Like, in the 2000s, you're still getting a bit of a bleed over from the 90s, that type of high school film and TV shows. Like, so you have like something like The OC, for example, and you still have those. And then, yeah, you hit into the last few years, that has a very, very distinctive vibe to it as well for younger people. But the 2010s, I'm trying to think of what was going on in the 2010s. I suppose we had just come out of a recession-ish. Like, we're the beginning of the 2010s is still there's the effect of that recession is still felt, but is that felt by teenagers? Not really. I suppose if it's felt by their parents, then it is felt by the teenagers as well. Technology probably has a lot to do with it, because smartphones aren't the norm just yet. They're getting there, but they're not the norm. And like you said, social media is on its way up, but it is still in its relative
infancy. Yeah, people were still taking like bird's eye view photos of their lattes, and that was Instagram.
That's like, yeah, because there was a point where like Twitter was about, what did you eat for breakfast this morning?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what Twitter was at the time. And then Facebook was more, let's make an album of
what's on your mind.
let's go out and like, oh, and you know, so we've moved away from, say, the MySpace and then moody MSN status updates and things like that to something a bit like social media, but nothing like it is today. Like today is a very different world in terms of social media, but that's a really interesting way of looking at it though. I never considered the 2010s as a decade and what was going on. Dakota, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. One of the things that sort of Jericho was talking about that sort of triggered something in my head was this idea of what teen movies were. And I think back to 21 Jump Street, which came out in 2012. So obviously a couple years before Barely Lethal, but there is a scene early on in the movie where you've got the opening sequence where they're actual high school students and then they go to the police academy, and Channing Tatum is the popular jock, he's the hot guy and all this sort of stuff. Jonah Hill is the nerdy loser. But then when things get switched and they're, you know, sent back to high school, Channing Tatum still looks like Channing Tatum does, and Jonah Hill still looks like Jonah Hill does, but he's a smart guy as well and he's sensitive. And he gets in there and they're both in there, and very quickly they realize that, oh, the roles have been reversed now. No longer is it just good enough to be the hot jock. You actually need to be smart and care about the environment and things like that. And there's like an actual joke. I believe it's Dave Franco basically plays the main antagonist in the film and makes a comment about environmentalism, and Channing Tatum's character makes fun of him, and like everyone like looks at Channing Tatum and is like, what's wrong with you? Like, we all know we're supposed to care about the environment now. And so I think that's sort of like a turning point in terms of teen movies, because it's absolutely true. The way kids process information is so different than what it did. Jericho, I don't know your age, so I assume you're much younger than Rachel and I. It's very different from... exactly. It's very
What's
different
so
from
funny?
The role that Rachel and I...
He's living in his euphoria days right now. He's living euphoria at the moment.
So it's just, it's such a different world. And yeah. I think it took a while for Hollywood movies, because, you know, they're written and produced by middle-aged white dudes, to realize what was actually happening with the youths, to sort of climatize that. And so I'm... Yeah.
You sound so old with the youths out there.
Well, I like... So you're saying about the producers, because when I saw Brett Ratner's name come across, I was like,
it was
oh,
a huge red flag.
This is going to be one of those movies. And it's, I think he was trying to do what he did in the 2000s in this new era where, to want to say woke like a Republican, but where people are more aware of what's harmful or and what's uplifting. And, you know, Brett Ratner doesn't strike me as the most responsible filmmaker. So I think he was trying to bring like that Rush Hour energy into this new era where you can get clocked for certain depictions or certain things. And he kind of gets away with it with the teacher, but at the same time, I think he was trying to evolve. I don't know.
The thing with that teacher, though, the creepy teacher, is it's never pointed out that he's creepy. Like, it's never, nobody reacts to him like he's creepy. He's
the one student, Cash, is mildly annoyed by him, but I think he's more annoyed that he's like, oh, an adult wants to hang out with me.
I looked at him as being like, he's meant to be a punchline. Like, he's just meant to be like, oh, isn't it funny that he told a girl to cover up? Like, you know, and for all we know, maybe it was not in the script that he dips into the girl's dress to be like, hey, pop those ladies up. Like, you know, maybe that wasn't part of the thing, but it's interesting what you guys are all saying. Cause like, I never, when I was trying to think about what makes this movie bad, like what makes this movie just not work, again, I said this to Dakota before, I was like, I couldn't really point to anything. I couldn't point to saying, I don't think the performances are absolutely horrendous, or even anybody is, the people are miscast, but I don't think it's a problem with the cast. I don't even think, I mean, the script is not great, and the premise, I understand it as well. Like, I kind of see what they're going for. But I think what we were just saying now, it kind of hits the head on the nail of saying, this is a movie that is very out of its time and very old-fashioned, even though we're only talking about 2015. It already felt old. And maybe, but again, okay, made in 2015, but we're watching this in 2023. So we have to, I suppose, consider that a little bit as well. But it does feel like a movie that doesn't sit well within the sphere of high school movies and all of the tropes and stereotypes that they're trying to put forward. But somehow just doesn't, it doesn't hit in the same way as a Mean Girls does. Because in a way, Mean Girls, I actually think is a good, it does satirize, you know, the different like lunchroom tables, for example. Like it is pointing out the stereotypes, and it does it in a way that, I mean, again, maybe I was good age for Mean Girls though, so maybe that's not fair to compare them, because I was also good.
Mean Girls also had a woman behind its story, and I think that's a big thing that was missing with Barely Lethal, because everything like we've been talking about screams misogyny, and everything like the mom's character was so underdeveloped in her relationship with her daughters, and the friendships between the girls, or like the antagonistic relationships between the girls. It felt, you could tell it was written by a man who had never met a woman in his life, and it was just, it was infuriating.
Like what he thinks, it's like what he thinks that teenagers talk about. Like it's kind of in his imagination what, well, it's not just one guy. It's the director, plus it's also
the writer, the
writer as well, John. Yeah. So it's kind of like it's what they think teenage girls in high school were talking about. I looked up the age of the director, and he was born in 76. So actually this movie is very much so out of, not to say young people should only, like only young people can make a young person film. Like you point out Tina Fey, I think that she, not to call her old, but I don't think she was anywhere near
John
high
Hughes
school age.
Was like always in his 40s when he was making these classic movies.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you don't necessarily need it, but yeah, there's definitely quite a disconnect between what they think was going. I also want to point out a fun fact though about this Kyle Newman character, is that Taylor Swift is the godmother of one of his children. Fun fact. Didn't interesting. Scrolling through this guy's wiki, I'm like, oh, how do they know each other? That's weird.
Okay, but this movie, now that you say it, is very Taylor Swift coded.
Okay, go on further. Keep going. Let's talk about this.
I can't explain it, but it just looking, it's very Taylor Swift coded.
It's Bad Blood, the movie.
Yes.
So I have a different question. I'm wondering how it read to the two of you, me being the sole straight man here. The look of this movie, I think they do their best to not over-sexualize these characters because they're teenagers, but I think it's a little difficult because you also have, you know, attractive people in it with, you know, Hailee Steinfeld and Sophie Turner and Jessica Alba, blah, blah, blah. But I think they do a decent enough job of sort of riding that line of, we're not overly sexualizing these people, but we're, you know, gonna let you know that they're still hot people in this movie. Did either of you sort of feel some sort of over sexualization or a need to glam everything up? Like, do you understand what I'm saying, Rachel?
I personally think this movie was very flat looking. Like there's nothing about it to me that screamed glam or anything. And almost that is I feel bad shitting on Euphoria.
Yeah, their dresses were awful.
But like there's nothing redeeming about what they're wearing, or like, even just the way like the rooms are designed. And in a sense, that's kind of refreshing, I suppose, because in high school, most people did wear not great clothing. And, you know, we weren't the Euphoria type girls where, you know, you basically look like you're a 20-year-old model, Victoria's Secret model. Like, most teenage girls are not dressing like that. Maybe they are today, I don't know. But I would say back in 2015, I don't think so. Like, I think it was very flat and it was very boring. But the funny thing is because it's so boring, it doesn't help the movie in the slightest. You kind of want it, especially for a movie like this. Like, this movie is meant to be a comedy. It's meant to be light. So I don't need it to look drab and realistic, because this movie is not realistic. So why not spice it up a little bit? But maybe they didn't know how to spice it up without overly sexualizing teenagers, because obviously near impossible, apparently, for men to do.
I felt the threat of sexualization was still there. Because before, like I was saying, it reminded me so much of Black Widow and that metaphor of girl spies as human trafficking. And I think just the callousness with which, I don't know Samuel's character, but the way he, like, if a girl spy dies in the field, you just keep flying, you just keep going. Mm-hmm. Or there's just like no he doesn't show that he cares about the girls as more than the services they could provide until much later in the film. So I always, it felt like, because I had seen Black Widow and I had seen what it did for the women spy genre in terms of turning it on its head and sort of revealing the misogynistic undertones of it, because it was directed by a woman, I came into Barely Lethal with, I just could not help but see when the little girls were training, this is the Red Room. These girls are being trained and they're hired and they have to perform services, whatever the mission requires. And we know in the vast history of women spy films what those services sometimes require. And so I think for me, the threat of sexualization was always there, even though it wasn't visually apparent here.
I think it just sort of added to the list of things that, whether or not it was done properly or not, but you can chalk it up to things this movie could have delved into and been interesting, but decides to just not delve into really anything deep at all.
It's almost like it's just straddling too many different camps. Like it's trying to put its foot into a lot of different things without ever being anything. Like it could have been really funny. You could have made it a really funny movie, but then there is kind of some weird, irky things about that, but maybe that is a time period thing. I don't know. By the way, Jericho, Samuel Jackson's character's name is Hardman.
Hardman. Do they ever say it?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I
won't lie. The script of this film, I just watched it this morning. It's not really sticking in the brain right now. I don't know how memorable this movie is going to be in like tomorrow. I don't know how much I'm going to think about it afterwards.
And I'm not going to lie, I took an edible when I watched this movie because I knew it was going to be bad. So my memory is a little hazy.
Helped, though. I feel like that could have really helped this
one.
Okay, why don't we, and does anybody have anything else they want to add before we flip into the gaming section?
I feel sorry for Hailee Steinfeld. I mean, I know what she was doing. She was, I think, what, 19 when she made this, and kudos to her for, you know, trying to propel her career. But girl,
I think that this is going to be one of those movies, because in a time, I do believe she's going to be one of the more prominent stars of like her kind of class in Hollywood. I do think she's going to have like a fairly good career. Maybe not. I don't know if she'll be like a leading lady type of career. I could see her taking on some more supporting stuff, though. But I think that this is going to be one of those blips in her career that somebody will bring it up in like 20 years time.
Yeah,
to her.
We all have
early job.
It comes in an era of her movies where she's playing supposed to be playing the not very attractive girl. And it's just like,
terrible thing for young actresses to deal with, like when you're cast in the role of being like like you mentioned Dave Franco and how saying like he's the antagonist. I'm like, well, of course he's the antagonist, because his face looks like an antagonist face. Like Dave Franco just has that look to him. But not to say for a guy that's not bad, of course it's bad, it sucks to look like a villain all the time, but like it's really bad for somebody like Hailee Steinfeld, who gets put into the role of like, oh, she's not the hot girl, but she's like the really smart girl. She's the one who, you know, she's super capable. And you're like, man, poor girl. Like, poor Hailee. But she'll be fine. I'm fairly confident she will be absolutely fine in her career. Because
like, it just sort of reeked of, oh, she took her glasses off. She is hot.
The Rachel Lee Cook thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never get over Rachel Lee Cook not being... But they do that in... It's another teen movie. Or not another teen movie, sorry. They have that whole thing where like, oh, she paints. Like she's got overalls on. Like, gross.
Which is a great scene.
It is. It's very, very funny. And then that movie is... That's an excellent movie. People don't talk about
it. I don't know if
about.
Everything holds up in that movie, but what it was doing at the time was pretty legendary.
But I think that's kind of the point, because if it did all hold up today, like if it was like correct today, then I'd be very disappointed in that movie, because that movie I don't think was ever meant to hold up in a time outside of its own. But anyways, okay, let's move on. So we are going to get into our double feature and Would You Rather in true Rachel fashion. I do not have a Would You Rather, but I will think about it as we can proceed. So let's start with double feature. Dakota, let's go with you. What would be your double feature pick that is not an A24 movie that you would suggest to somebody to watch alongside Barely Lethal?
So this is tough. I've got two in mind. One we've mentioned a whole bunch of times on this episode, and so I sort of feel like maybe that's just whatever. Maybe I shouldn't mention that one. And then the other one, I can't remember if I've actually seen it or not, and I personally have a philosophy of not recommending movies I haven't seen. But I think it works a lot better.
Give us both. Give both. Give both.
Okay, so obviously the main one is Black Widow. We've mentioned it a dozen times in this podcast already, and I think it's pretty clear of why these two are similarly matched about, you know, young girls taken from their homes and trained to be spy slash assassins and going out in the world and kind of having a crisis of humanity of what they are. And then the other one is Agent Cody Banks. Because
that's a good one.
It's about a child spy.
Interesting. Yeah.
I love that movie as a kid.
I think I'm gonna go with that. I just cannot for the life of me, if I like, I know I've seen clips from it a million times, I just can't remember if I saw all the way through when I was young. I think I did, but I don't know for sure, so I'm gonna go with it anyways. Agent Cody Banks, for obvious reasons as well.
I don't think I've seen that. I know it. It's that's Malcolm in the Middle. Or what's his real name?
Frankie Muniz and Hilary Duff.
So. Malcolm in the Middle.
Malcolm, first name in the middle. that's a good pick, though. And I do think we were all probably, I think all of us considered Black Widow at some point in our picks. But Jericho, what's your double feature pick?
My pick is The Edge of 17, which also stars Hailee Steinfeld in a good high school movie. That I think, because we're talking about how Barely Lethal doesn't really land with or doesn't really accomplish what it sets out to do. And I think The Edge of 17 is a more promising endeavor. And I think it came out like the year after this one. So for Hailee Steinfeld, I'm sure she saw Barely Lethal and was like, I need to do something to redeem myself. And that's what Edge of 17 was.
She's probably like halfway through filming and was like, I need to do something. Yeah. We need something else.
It's funny. I actually paired The Edge of 17 with The Spectacular Now because I love that movie too.
Yeah. I just want to also point out Hailee Steinfeld apparently is dating Josh Allen. And I don't know if there's any football.
The quarterback?
Thing. Yeah, man. She's dating Josh Allen, who's one of my favorite kind of the modern day quarterbacks. I do like him a lot. Anyways. My double feature pick is also a spy movie. I did think about Black Widow. I did think about Mean Girls. I kind of figured we would talk about them a bit extensively. And thing also, though, I was going to say if nobody else mentioned Black Widow, I was probably just going to pick Black Widow. But I'm going to go with Harriet the Spy, which was a movie that came out in the late 90s. And a movie I absolutely adored as a kid. I really loved it. If I watched it today, I think it would be really cheesy. But it was an insanely fun film when I was little that made me want to be a spy, like genuinely made me want to be a spy. I remember I was in Brownies when I was a little kid, and you get this belt with a little pouch thingy inside it that you're supposed to put like your compass and your magnifying glass and things like that. After I watched this movie, I went and I found that belt again, and then I tried to make like a little belt, like a utility belt, like the one that Harriet has. And I used to carry a notebook around with me like she did, like as if I was like spying on. Anyways, I really love that movie, and it was one of those films that as a young kid it just really captured my imagination of what that life could be like what a spy, what it could be like to be in deep into espionage. But but it's also a more, I don't want to say realistic because it's not realistic, but it's a movie that I think it's the perfect illustration of a little kid, a little girl out there who wants to be a spy and how that might go. Because you wouldn't actually be a spy like, you know, Agent 83 and 84 and whatnot. You would probably be a lot closer to Harriet the Spy. And I loved Harriet the Spy. So, and that was Michelle Trachtenberg as a young girl. And if no one's watched it, go watch it. It's a very fun movie. Let's go with Would You Rather, and we will start with Jericho. Did I start with you on Dakota for the double feature?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jericho, why don't you kick us off with the Would You Rather?
Okay. Taking the spy world of this film, would you rather have been abducted or orphaned?
Oh my God. Jesus Christ. You have been abducted or...
Oh, man. Oh, Jericho. This goes down to, like, the annals of our depressing would-you-rather questions that we've come up with in the past. Okay, I'll go first. I have an answer. I would say orphaned, and the reason why is
because... Wow, you kill your parents?
Jeez, Dakota.
That's not what I'm saying. Don't you dare quote me on that. The reason why is because... assuming you get to, you know, Haley Steinfeld age or whatever, and you realize, oh, wow, I actually have a family and they've probably been looking for me and they miss me and they love me. I would feel so much more betrayed rather than someone that was like, hey, I can give this kid a life and some purpose. So that's my rationale.
I would rather be orphaned because then I would be closer to being Batman.
Yep. There we go.
Point. That's it. That's my. I could possibly be Batman if I were orphaned. Although I don't know if I'd have a butler, because my family's not that rich.
So then you'd be Agent 86.
I don't know. I could be Jessica Alba and be one
Agent One,
and then I could also become Honey and get a really cool haircut and become a dancer.
And Susan Storm, that wig, it was giving Susan Storm.
I know. I kind of was like, is this the same time? Like, did she? Was it just like an easier thing for her to keep the hair? I don't know. Jericho, what would you pick? Would you rather be orphaned or would you rather be abducted?
Abducted.
You don't want to kill your parents.
No, I kind of like the element of surprise and being like, hey, I'm home one day.
We had a funeral for you, Jericho. It was an empty casket.
But also just like knowing that... if you're stuck in this situation, there's people somewhere out there for you. That's incentive to like find a way out.
So you would go like find them. You would be like, my mission is to go find my parents.
Yeah, like Jason Bourne, but I remember.
And then, but then you could find like another boy who looks exactly like you, and then you each have half a medallion, and then
yeah, which is easy because I just go to Asia.
Exactly. You just go to the Philippines and clearly it would be super easy to find two very specific people in the Philippines. Yes, exactly. Dakota, what would you rather be?
Okay, would you rather experience high school played out like in Dazed and Confused, filled with hazing and knowing that you've peaked in life, or like in Clueless, where if you don't have the right outfit on, you'll be considered a pariah and no one will ever talk to you?
I pick Clueless.
Yeah, I could give two tosses about what I wear. So if people don't want to talk to me, I'd probably be very peaceful about that, to be honest with you. I just sit at a lunch table and just do my math homework and no one would bother me. I think I'd be okay. I don't think the idea for Dazed and Confused that I've always found really tragic was what you said about like peaking in high school. To me, that is one of the saddest things. Not one of the saddest things ever could be experienced in your life, but the idea that you've peaked at like, it's very sad to me when you meet people and like those people do exist who clearly their best years were in high school and their best memories in their life were created in high school. And it's not to say you can't have good memories and good times in high school. Like I hope everybody did, but to say that those are your best, that's the best moments in your life, I think is sad because you have a lot of living to do post high school. Jericho,
yeah, I struggled with finding a comparison to like pair with Dazed and Confused. I was like, oh, maybe I'll do 13, you know, where you're going down a black hole of drugs, sex and alcohol. And I was like, that's a little too dark.
Jericho, why Clueless though?
Because I would always know what to wear. Hello. So I'm the opposite of you, where I'd pull up in my checkered suit or whatever.
Yeah,
parachute pants. It wouldn't be a problem.
You have the bucket hats too. You've got many bucket hats, but you got a bucket hat that looks cool.
I've got two bucket hats. One for the
and they look cool. So that's how Jericho was rocking around TIFF, by the way, for anyone interested. Every time I bumped into him, he had a bucket hat on.
I did.
So, but the issue is, what if this super cool outfit that you believe you have, teens are fickle. The next day, that's suddenly all out of style, and you wear that, your social credit is ruined.
I'm going to give Jericho some credit here and say that he would be the kid that decides what is fashionable and what is not. He is not the kid that is subjected to, hey, man, what you're wearing isn't cool anymore. Jericho would be the one being like, bitch, why are you wearing that? Like, that's what Jericho would be.
Right? I would be the first one who bought army pants and flip-flops, and then that's why everyone else bought army pants and flip-flops.
Jericho is by far a leader, as opposed to saying that's by far being
But what you're saying is then Jericho is Regina George.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
But in a great way, though. I feel like, I think Regina
in
awesome.
A useful way.
Okay. Yes, I'm sure she also thought she was providing a service.
Girl got hit by a bus. Let's give her some slack.
Yeah, and she survived.
What a hero. What an inspiration Mother. To all of us. Dakota, what would you choose between the two?
Yeah, same as the two of you. It's far less life or death. It was a very silly would you rather.
I still can't think of one. What would you guys rather? Okay, here. Okay. Okay, here we go. I got it.
Lay it on us.
Would you rather? No, the answer is very obvious. What was Alba's name? And it was Sue Storm. She was Sue Storm. Okay, we'll do like a four-part would you rather. So would you rather be... I have to get everyone's name correctly, though. Would you rather be Sue Storm, a la Jessica Alba? Going through high school, okay, going through high school, or would you like to be Sansa Stark going through modern day high school, not like Game of Thrones type high school, but like you are exactly who she is then, and then Sue Storm is exactly who she is as well. She's a bit of a dick, I think, in my opinion.
Sue Storm is a dick to you?
I don't like her. I don't like her.
She has poor taste in men. I think that's her problem.
Like, I would choose Sansa 100%. Now, if you guys haven't watched Game of Thrones, then this doesn't really work, but...
But do we have, like, the invisibility powers?
Sure. It's creepy, though, man. In a high school. Although you would be in high school as well, though, so it's okay, I guess.
Yeah, I pick Sue Storm.
You go Sue Storm. Dakota, what about you?
I haven't seen any Fantastic Four movies.
Really?
So, oh. Yeah, none of them.
Okay, then hold on. We'll go with, for you, because I keep thinking that, you know, the guy that was playing the guy in the band? I keep thinking he looked like Ryder Strong from Boy Meets World. Did anyone else think
Also, that? Never watched that.
Oh.
Do you know who that guy is, though?
No, I don't.
His name is Cash. He's Florence Pugh's brother.
Shut up.
Really?
Yep.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
We were speechless for a moment. What's his name?
Toby Sebastian.
Yeah.
Professionally Toby Sebastian. But his name is actually Sebastian Toby M. Pugh. Pugh.
Yep. Pugh.
Pugh. Thank you. I'm really having a tough time with names recently.
Pugh.
Wow. So Haley's acted with both siblings. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's genuinely impressive, that thing. So sorry, Dakota, you can't participate in my fabulous would you
I'll
rather
just say
then.
Sansa Stark, because she was her I liked her character. She was smart and cunning and blah blah blah,
and traumatized.
She was very traumatized.
Who among us is not a little traumatized, Jericho?
No, but hers is like legit trauma, though.
Yeah,
it's not like
that's true.
Not like the trauma of today, no offense to people, but it is like legit trauma that she's that girl was going through. And then I might actually take Sue Storm now because I forgot about the invisibility thing. And that actually would be kind of cool. Like, now that I think about it, the invisibility thing might be kind of cool to have in high school.
You just have terrible luck with men.
Yeah. See things that you don't want to see. Anyways. Jericho, what are you working on that you want to plug, and where can people find you?
Well, I have stepped into a new role at the Asian Cat, which is very exciting.
Yay.
I recently published an essay on Alice Wu's two films, Saving Face and The Half of It, which I would recommend reading if you like queer Asian cinema. And keep an eye out for the Asian Cuts Instagram, because new things are happening there.
To quote Jericho, he's in his influencer era at the moment. I want to push his essay, though, in that, number one, Alice Wu left some very, very nice comments about it on the Asian Cuts Twitter feed. And a lot of people have read it and have given very, just very nice feedback on it. And it's a beautiful essay. I would highly recommend anyone go read it. And that was what I was going to promote as well. I say go take a look at Jericho's essay. You can find me at rachelho.com and _ Rachel KH. Dakota, what's going on ContraZoomPod.com?
Yeah, so got a few reviews up. Jeff Ballmer just reviewed Gran Turismo. He got sent a copy of the Blu-ray. I know it's been out for a while, but he got a physical copy and did a nice review of that. And then also have some mini capsule reviews from Paulo Bautista covering the Doc New York NYC Festival, whatever that's called. I'm blanking on what the official festival name is called. So you can look for that. And then definitely lots more stuff coming on ContraZoomPod.com. This has been a That Shelf podcast. Visit thatshelf.com for more great film discourse. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads at ContraZoomPod. What do you think of Barely Lethal? Have you seen it? Do you think any movie pairs well nicely with it? Let us know. Send an email to ContraZoomPod@gmail.com. Thank you to Eric and Kevin Smale for the theme music and to Stephanie Pryor for the logo design. If you like to listen to podcasts on YouTube, we do post all episodes there as well. And if you really like the show, consider tipping us on Ko-fi. Thanks for checking us out.